conversation's possibility, the conditions of emergence. So I'm saying you at the end of the day, Hillary Clinton has been put in office because the Supreme Court justices will make a difference, the way in which the landscape of policy recommendations will make a difference, the presence of a person who is open to challenging white supremacy, white hegemony, white dominance, and white privilege through her own rhetoric. And if she means it or not is irrelevant, because we can take that rhetoric and do with it what we will.
We're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank you both for being with us. I want to thank Michael Eric Dyson for being with us. Michael Eric Dyson is a professor at Georgetown University, author of many books, including The Black Presidency, Barack Obama, and the Politics of Race in America, and Professor Eddie Glaud, who teaches at Princeton University, head of the Department of African American Studies. His most recent book, Democracy in Black, How Race Still Enslaves the American Soul. That does it for our show. I'll be doing a report back from the conventions at two talks, Friday, July 29th in Provincetown Town Hall in Massachusetts, and Saturday at Martha's Vineyard Old Wailing Church. Check our website, democracynow.org. Happy birthday to Rob Young. Special thanks to Laura Deutsch, Blair Tinklossing, Ryan Saunders. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!, broadcasting from the Democratic Convention. Thanks for joining us.
It's 5 o'clock p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. We'll be hearing live from the Democratic Convention up next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of She Gotta Have It at Top Down Rooftop Cinema, Thursday, July 28th at 8 p.m. on top of the Hotel Deluxe parking structure here in Portland. She Gotta Have It is Spike Lee's first feature film, released in 1986. The film tells the story of Nola Darling, a young woman who refuses to choose between her three lovers because she views monogamy as a form of slavery. Again, that's She Gotta Have It at the Top Down Rooftop Cinema, Thursday, July 28th at 8 p.m. on the top of the Hotel Deluxe parking structure at Southwest 15th and Yamhill in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Pacifica's coverage of the Democratic National Convention.
The convention hall. Yes, we are in Philadelphia. It is the final night here of the DNC, and a lot of anticipation. As you can imagine, the crowds have been growing because tonight is the night you will hear from Hillary Clinton. Now, a lot of action has been going on inside the convention as well as outside the convention. What we're going to start to do, though, this is Margaret Prescott, and I'm here with Askia Muhammad. Askia, a lot going on.
We're fortunate to be inside the convention hall. Fortunate indeed. First, the weather, a torrential rain downpour came. Fortunately, some of us were inside already.
No flash floods, though.
No flash floods. And then the security is being tightened everywhere. The people are not being permitted to come in. People are being not permitted to sit with their delegations. And so the security is being tightened in anticipation of any protest that might look like it want to suggest that it could occur.
They're going to nip it in the bud.
Right.
Well, just...
Muhammad Ali said, don't think about it. Don't dream about doing anything.
Well, we'll see if any of the protesters do get through. Just to give you some latest poll information, Rasmussen reports Hillary Clinton only 1 point ahead of Donald Trump in the general election. All other recent polls have showed Hillary dropping and Trump on the rise. This past Tuesday, as we reported early in the week, the Los Angeles Times and USC released a new poll that had Trump winning the general election by 7 points, his biggest margin in a national poll as of yet. And in Tuesday's Reuters poll, he was up again by 2 percentage points. And again, the news not so great in the swing states. The race is really tight in the swing states. According to Real Clear Politics, right here in Pennsylvania, Clinton ahead 4.4 percentage points. In North Carolina and Nevada, Clinton ahead by just 2 percentage points. In Ohio, she's up by 0.8 percentage points. In Iowa and Arizona, Clinton ahead by half a point. And in Florida, Trump ahead by 0.3 percentage points. And as of tonight, the wunderkind of polls, Nate Silver, formerly of the New York Times, Nate Silver's 538.com, has Trump with a 46.4% chance of winning the presidency, Askia.
Well, I think all of this is, you know, it's so ironic because what all the mayhem that happened last week in Cleveland, it ended with the proposition that Trump will do okay if he doesn't mess up. And so I think that's the general consensus throughout the country. As long as he doesn't mess up, he's doing okay. And that's absurd because none of his past sins, none of his past foibles, none of his gross insults to everyone in the whole world seem to matter as long as today he didn't mess up. Yesterday he said, okay, Vladimir, you guys need to hack the DNC, hack the State
Putin,
Department.
Bring in the Russians.
Right, hack the State Department and get Hillary Clinton's missing 30,000 emails. I mean, he finally had to back away from that. It's like, well, I'm not going to invite espionage against my own country, someone told him not to do, but he gets away with murder. I mean, he says he could get away with murder, so he's getting away with it. Perhaps after this event, there will be evidence of some bounce. I think there's people we've hoped in vain that somehow or another reason would overtake people, that they would see that this is a madman. He's not dumb. You know,
that he's not.
He's not dumb. You know, but, you know, as they say in the state hospitals, I may be crazy, but I'm not stupid. He's a certified madman, but he's not dumb.
Yeah, and really, Trump said today that he was kidding, you know, in relation to the Russians. But, you know, that story has legs. It's still growing. President Obama weighed in on it. We've been saying that the Cold War has arrived, is here, you know, in the DNC. And Speaker of the House Paul Ryan said Russia is a global menace led by a devious thug, and Putin should stay out of this election. So now Putin is being blamed for this stuff. And the Clinton campaign said it was, quote, the first time that a major presidential candidate has actively encouraged a foreign power to conduct espionage against a political opponent, as you have said. But interestingly enough, in President Barack Obama's speech last night, when he talked about jihadists and what we're not going to put up with, he added communists into that list. A lot of people didn't pick up on that. You know, one of our young folks here picked up on it and pointed it out afterwards. So why are you putting jihadists and communists together in the same sentence? And this has something to do with Putin, I think. It has something to do with NATO pressing up against Russia's borders when they had agreed not to. So we're going to have to watch this story. And as Gerald Horn has warned us, across the pond in the UK, among the conservatives, there's a lot of loose talk about war with Russia. So let's see how that goes. But Askia, just quick news on the protest, and then we're going to go to the update from the floor. 34 protesters were taken into custody by police last night at the DNC for blocking an exit to the convention area. Philadelphia police have already cited 103 protesters this week, and 44 of those citations were yesterday alone. 10 protesters were given citations after they zip-tied themselves to a railing inside the Comcast Center lobby to protest corporate media. And yesterday, others in Center City gathered to protest that all the charges dropped against police officers in the Freddie Gray case. And we know there was a lot of action also on the floor last night. Charisse reported it. For those of our listeners who tuned in last night, President Barack Obama spoke last night. a lot of tears. He really caught the audience there. We also heard from Vice President Joe Biden and Hillary's running mate, Tim Kaine. But when the former CIA Director and Defense Secretary Leon Panetta spoke, many people in the crowd interrupted him and chanted, "No more war, love not war, and no more drones." And others tried to drown them out by shouting Hillary. We hope to play some of that sound later in the broadcast. But Askia, why don't we go now? Charisse Delgadillo, one of our young team members here, she's been out on the floor. What's going on, Charisse? Welcome. And what did you find out? Thank you very much.
Well, interesting enough, the Bernie Sanders delegates are not staying quiet. Last night, when a lot of people were shouting out "No more war," the DNC shut the light off on the section over those people, and then they afterwards countered that by turning on their cell phone lights. So tonight, what they're doing is they're wearing glow-in-the-dark neon shirts that say, "Enough is enough," quote by Bernie Sanders. So, and I got confirmation from a Colorado delegate that was wearing one of those t-shirts who confirmed that they are allowed to carry whatever signs they want onto the floor, but once they put it up, they can either get taken away or they can get thrown out. But there is a lockdown after 9 o'clock. So let's just see what's going to be happening after 9 o'clock, because apparently they're saying that they can't get thrown out after 9 o'clock. So there might be some antics on the floor. However, I would say that a lot of the speakers were being well received. You had Julian Castro. Joaquin Castro. You had Nancy Pelosi. You had the governor of New York speak, and they were well received by the crowd, even by some of the people who were wearing the Bernie Sanders t-shirt. So it seems like there's a lot of different issues happening on the floor. But it's going to be an interesting night.
And we'll be getting more news from you, Charisse. Thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
Each hour we're going to be getting reports from the floor. So Askia, it seems it's another hot. Well, we're hot because they have us, as we said, in the inner city. We like in the ghetto over here, Pacifica Radio, because we're right near the doors. They're open all the time. Everybody else got really nice air conditioning, and we're over here sweating bricks, right?
Yes, we are sweating bricks, and it seems so inconsistent. One minute it's hot, and the next minute the doors are closed, and it sort of cools down. So I don't know if it's a conspiracy. A California delegate came over and said that he had been ejected and told he could not sit any longer with his delegation. And so from the nosebleed sections to the very floor, people are being jostled around. And I think intentionally trying to be kept off their feet and at just not knowing exactly what is going on or what's going on next. But certainly those who are protesting, a Code Pink demonstration just took place. Justice for Palestine was their message. And so the protesters are just as clever, just as creative. The other, with the cell phones, with the glow-in-the-dark shirts, they're giving the security gurus all they can handle.
Right, and Code Pink did a banner drop last night. What we're going to do now, Askia, and of course this is Pacifica Radio's national broadcast. We are on the ground in Philadelphia inside the convention hall. It is the last night for the Democratic National Convention. Now, more controversy, because for the last a day or so now, Sanders delegates and Sanders supporters have been really upset that Nina Turner, many people have seen her on television. I hate to call her a Sanders surrogate, because the sister is a woman in her own, you're right. You know, she put it, I'm nobody's surrogate, really. And she, of course, a former Ohio State Senator, and her credentials were revoked. and she was kicked out of the proceedings. And there was a press conference attended by Susan Sarandon, Danny Glover, and others really complaining bitterly and about the treatment of Nina Turner by what they say is the Clinton camp. We're going to go now to hear a bit of what Nina Turner had to say yesterday.
Yeah, well, you know, I really do appreciate what all the supporters have done in terms of making sure that they have my back. As a leader of the progressive movement, I think it's important that we continue to push forward on the platform issues and continue to push forward. That's what I want to do as a leader of this movement.
That was Nina Turner, not to be confused with Tina Turner, but also an awesome woman indeed, speaking on her ejection. She was due to introduce Senator Sanders yesterday, and somehow because of her her stand on principle, her credential was pulled.
Yeah, and if you ever heard Nina Turner speak, they didn't want Nina Turner anywhere near that stage because she'd have stirred everybody up. Okay, if they thought Obama was stirring people up, you know, just give Nina a go at it. What we're going to do now, Daniel, one of our young team members, he's been out and about on the street. And let's go now to some of the protest audio. These are Bernie DNC protests.
From what I understand, it's a walkout. The Bernie delegates are basically asking the DNC. They want unity. There's a few things that need to happen. And so it's just a silent protest. Pretty straightforward. So they
walked in and then just sat
exactly
down?
How it all worked out in terms of who's inside, who's out. I know that a lot of people are inside, obviously locked in. And they basically made a list or spoke with the media inside about what the things that they wanted from the party in order to get unity. Obviously, given the nature of how unfair this process has been, there are a few things that Bernie delegates wanted to unify the party.
Do you know what any of those things are?
What was on the list? Obviously, we didn't want to make this too public.
Do we know what was on that list?
On what list?
That was read off.
There's one person appointed in each delegation that was in contact with this person that helped us, and it was the representative that spoke in the tent. And we all put something together from each state on why this is not acceptable the way that we've been treated. So what was listed off was things, basically, you want unity, these are our demands, because we have been stifled from the minute we got here. It was not a democracy. It was, you sit there, you do what you're told, you lay down, and that's not acceptable anymore.
And speaking of protests, you know, for weeks, there has been a DNC action committee that has been meeting right here on the ground in Philadelphia, trying to do their best to try to coordinate all of the different protests that were going on. They knew that thousands of people were going to descend on Philadelphia. And we have two members of the DNC action committee. We first would like to welcome Brianna Jones. Brianna Jones is on the phone with us because Brianna is on her way to yet another protest. Brianna, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Margaret.
Yes, and in studio, we have another member of the DNC Action Committee, Women's Rights and Anti-Racist Activist Coordinator of the Crossroads Women's Center, a Quaker. The Quakers have a long tradition in this city. We'd like to welcome Phoebe Jones.
Thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
So what we want both of you to tell us, and we'll start with you, Brianna, tell us a bit about what the DNC Action Committee hope to do and your take on whether you achieved your goal.
Well, you know, from the beginning, solidarity was the name of the game. We knew that everyone has a great message to send, whether it's environmental justice, racial justice, criminal justice, but that voice is just diluted when it's facing the powers that be alone. And we knew that if we rally together, that's the only way that we can make a wave big enough that can't be ignored.
Yes, and Phoebe, your take. Thousands of people were expected. And the range, not everybody on the DNC Action Committee agreed. I mean, there were lots of different points of view, lots of different protests happening. Phoebe.
Yeah, it was really an exciting coming together because you had from prayer circles to Black Resistance March to Bernie or Bus. I mean, all over the place, really. And it was quite amazing that everybody stayed together. And I think the reason is that people realize we need to be together. We want to be together. And people were excited to be together. And I compare it to the Republican National Convention, which was here in Philadelphia in 2000. People point a lot to the fact that there were a lot of arrests, which was true. But it seemed back then that it was a one-off. Now it seems like everybody is saying this is the start, this is the beginning. We are not going away. We are finding a way to each other, and we're not. This isn't going away. This is continuing.
And Brianna, for you, Brianna Jones, a young African American woman. Was this your first kind of political and organizing experience there, Brianna?
You know, it was my first organizing experience in this capacity, but certainly not my first political. I'm from a long line of Philadelphia residents who marched with Mumia from the very beginning, Philadelphia chapter Black Panther. So I grew up with, political thinking, but sort of diverged from it when I went in my own direction in life. But this election season and just the crucial climate of everything right now just ignited me to not stand by and be apathetic to the need.
So Brianna grew up in an activist household. Now the household you grew up in is somewhat different. Just give us a little taste of that, because that helped to get you to where you are now.
When the civil rights movement was happening, and my parents were not exactly part of it, but they were very supportive of it. And my father worked for Bobby Kennedy in the Justice Department, and it was really the highlight of his life to make his law degree count for something. And I don't think he ever had that kind of high in the rest of his life, even though he made money and he became very successful. That was really the high point of his life. And my mother, too. We were, she was very politically active. And I don't know if there's time, but my father ran for county supervisor, and he had the support of the Black community. And the motorcycle carrying the satchel of votes from the Black community accidentally lost it, and my father lost the election by 8 votes. That was Virginia politics in those days. That's what we grew up with, and I went, they sent me to the first integrated school in the state of Virginia. My teacher was Cab Calloway's daughter. I mean, it was an exciting time. So that, and then there's the Quaker part too, the anti-war part. But
And Askia, I mean, it's interesting hearing the divergent stories, representing really different aspects of the movement.
We do greatly admire and respect and appreciate the Friends. And the Friends, as you pointed out, Margaret, are very strong here in Pennsylvania and in Philadelphia as well. Brianna, I want to thank you for raising up the name of Mumia Abu-Jamal. We were
thank
in
you.
Cleveland, and we never heard the name of Tamir Rice. And here we are in Philadelphia, and we're just not hearing the name of Mumia Abu-Jamal. And it's so important that mm-hmm. that name be raised up. Many of us
yes.
believe, and without compromising any journalistic integrity, that based on investigation, based on facts and information, that Mumia is an innocent man. And so mm-hmm. your involvement in activism is well-rooted, and how can you ever go wrong after that?
Absolutely. Long live John Africa.
Yeah, and Brianna, we're going to have to wrap things up. A lot going on here. But what is the protest that you're on your way to?
Well, that's the thing about solidarity. We are here to just bring people together. We're in the car right now with all of our signs, all of our banners, all of our megaphones, and all of our messages. It's as far as you can imagine, every single corner of dissent that you can possibly think of. So, the best is about to happen in about 10 minutes.
In about 10 minutes. And Phoebe, a quick word. You helped to pull together Women Speak Out, the only community event focused on women.
Yeah, and we came up with demands. We, you know, let people say what they wanted on a range of issues, and we're taking those demands into the convention and beyond. You know, this is what we are going to be pressing for, from a living wage for mothers and other caregivers to anti-war to no police violence, you know, to Rise Out of Poverty Act. It was, again, a coming together.
Yeah, and Flint, Michigan was in the house. Well, Brianna Jones, we'll let you run off to your protest. Phoebe Jones,
two
Joneses in the house. Thank you for joining us. Right. This is Margaret Prescott here with Askia Muhammad, and this is live coverage of Pacifica Radio of the DNC. We're now going to go to the floor, get some of the action on the floor, where we understand Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf. Is he next? Let's go to the floor right now.
And thus you had to treat everyone like they mattered. Why? Because in fact, they do matter. Now I understand that not all business people see it this way. When we contracted with a vendor, we paid that vendor. Donald Trump, he stiffed hundreds of small businesses, from plumbers to painters, ruining their companies as he sought to enrich himself. At our company, like at many others all across this country, we treated our employees with respect. When they had kids, we celebrated them, and we gave new moms paid leave. Donald Trump said that pregnant workers are an inconvenience. So it's no surprise that he has put forward no plan for paid family leave. Finally, another important part of our business model was that we had a profit-sharing plan. We knew our employees, thank you. We knew that our employees contributed to our growth. So in addition to good wages, good family-sustaining wages, and really good benefits, we shared between 20 and 30% of our profit with our employees directly. Just to give you an example, in 2013, which was a turnaround year for our company, all of our workers, hundreds of them, received on average, $5,000 each in profit sharing that they could use for college tuition, a well-earned vacation, or they could spend it on anything else they wanted. How about Donald Trump? Well, he runs his businesses so that they only help who? You guessed it, Donald Trump. In his six bankruptcy filings, he used the process to protect himself and even enrich himself while his employees were left out of luck. We didn't do what we did because we were looking for awards. We did it because it was the right thing to do for our workers, and we did it because it was great for our company's bottom line. It was smart business, plain and simple. We were a stronger, more successful business because we were all in it together. Hillary Clinton believes that too. And that's why, as president, Hillary Clinton will reward companies that share profits with employees, not just executives. Under her proposal, companies will get tax credits worth 15% of the profits they share with their employees. The credits would last 2 years and would be larger for smaller businesses, because Hillary believes that if you work hard, you should share in your company's success.
And that was part of the remarks of Tom Wolf, the governor of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, state of Pennsylvania, Commonwealth. He is the governor speaking on the floor. And here at this Democratic National Convention, you're listening to Pacifica Radio's coverage here from live from Philadelphia. I'm Askia Muhammad with Margaret Prescott and our full team in the House. Earlier, we talked with the remarkable Maxine Waters.
This is Margaret Prescott, and I'm here with Askia Muhammad, and it is the Pacifica Radio's national broadcast inside the convention hall of the DNC. And we're delighted to be able to snag Congresswoman Maxine Waters, who spoke on the floor in the convention, busy running around. Welcome, Congresswoman Maxine Waters.
Well, thank you so much, and I'm always delighted to be with you, Mark. You know that. And so let's talk about what's going on here.
That's right. Well, yes. You spoke on the floor. Give us a little bird's eye view of what were the key things you wanted to get, or better yet, what didn't you get to say that you really wanted to say?
That's it, because you see, these speaking times are very limited, very short.
Yeah.
And you don't get a chance to say everything that you want to say. I really, to tell you the truth, aside from talking about Hillary Clinton herself, I wanted to do some of what we heard done last night. I want to talk about Trump. I wanted to talk about why he's so dangerous and why he must be opposed, and how I believe that we still have not yet learned all about him and who he really is and the damage that he's done to a lot of people's lives. So I didn't have a chance to do it. So I talked about Hillary. I basically talked about the fact that she has to be a unifying force, that she has to unify this party. I believe that she can do it. I also talked about the fact that...
How can she do it, though? I mean, these Bernie folks, they're determined. They were inside the hall, they're outside the hall, they're outside again tonight.
I think it's a matter of numbers now. I think she certainly has the majority. But that group who's outside of outside in the halls, as you have identified, they're not really Democrats who are on a Democratic agenda and even working on platform and all of that. They believe that, you know, there's too much corruption in the country, in government. They don't like, you know, the way the country is run, period. And so they're out to try and use this as a platform to talk about all of those things. For example, on TPP, we had TPP in the platform, and she has now agreed that she will not support TPP, but it was not good enough for them. They said, we need to put something a little extra in there so people will really understand that she's against TPP. Well, you know, so I think that they'll continue that small element, but it's not the major ones in the Sanders campaign.
Congresswoman, one thing I've observed in this convention, serendipity stepped in, Debbie Wasserman Schultz stepped aside. Our good friend Donna Brazile was promoted. Your colleague in the Black Caucus, Marsha Fudge, got the gavel. Leah Hathaway became the CEO of this convention. But this is not something new. I met sisters in the house.
I tell you.
On the way here, I met the woman who was the chair of the host committee of the Denver Convention, who is also a black woman. So, talk about the history of black women and. In this movement in the Democratic Party, it's almost as if you own a wing of the Democratic Party yourselves, black women.
Well, to tell you the truth, black women are the strongest, most consistent constituency of the Democratic Party, period. And many of us have been working at this for a long time. Donna Brazile didn't just come on the scene. She's been working at this. She worked for Eleanor Holmes Norton. She's been a member of the DNC. She's in charge of vice president, in charge of voter registration and outreach, etc. You have Leah Daultrey. This is her second time of being the CEO of the DNC. And then you have our newer women, like our mayor of Boston, who is here, who has now an officer in the Democratic National Committee. But on that platform, behind the scenes, you had Mignon Moore. They all started out with Jesse Jackson. You had Alexis Herman, who has served as secretary in the Clinton administration. So we are very experienced. We have strong backgrounds. We understand all of this. And these women perhaps could be the CEOs of any major corporation in America and doing these kinds of things. This is an opportunity for us to show who we are and what we can do, and it's just fabulous.
But you haven't lost touch with the grassroots, have you?
Never. As I was reminding somebody about when I was writing something about Hillary Clinton, being able to meet with generals and with our friends and foes around the world because of her background and her experience. And I thought about Rudyard Kipling in his poem, If, and not lose the common touch.
And Congresswoman Absolutely. Maxine Waters, just, you know, we're not going to leave this discussion without raising something about Haiti.
Sure.
Because with, you know, what a lot of us are hoping, we know your support for the grassroots in Haiti and all that mess that they're pulling against President Aristide and Lavalas and the violence and all of that. And in fact, there may be a woman president in Haiti with Dr. Maryse Narcisse.
Yes, that's right.
But you have been holding the State Department under this Democratic president to account and holding their feet to the fire to do the right thing on Haiti. So now
I'm upset with
Hillary
the State
Clinton,
Department. Upset with the State Department. They pulled out all support for the elections. And I'm asking, I wanted to know why. I mean, you know that there are problems with elections in Haiti. And given the last election where you had fraud, and you tell me now the United States is going to pull out, and they said we had to make some decision between how we spend our resources. Were we going to help, you know, with education and water and all of that? Or, I said, that's not a good enough excuse. I am not happy with what our State Department is doing, pulling out the support for the elections in Haiti in October, and we're on it.
Right. Well, on that note, Congresswoman Maxine Waters, we know you got to run.
Yes.
We appreciate you taking a few minutes to be with us, and thank you so
very
much.
You're so welcome. I love you, and you keep doing everything that you're doing. You're one of the most progressive voices in the country,
and
I appreciate you.
Support community radio.
That's right. Support community radio. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes on the hillside, little boxes all the same. There's a pink one and a green one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same.
Well, people don't look the same here. We're on the floor of the Democratic National Convention. Well, we're in the arena where the Democratic National Convention is taking place, 2016 in Philadelphia. This is Pacifica Radio's live broadcast. Our location is unique in compared to where we were in Cleveland, and it gives us an opportunity. We're right on the in the arena, and everybody walks by our doors, as we mentioned before, are right at the entrance. And so when it gets hot and they have a bunch of people coming in, the doors are open and it's hot in here. But the advantage is that we see and hear practically everything that's going on. People come by, we hear the noise, you can hear it as well in the background as we're speaking sometimes, because the noisy activities are going on here, and it's part of the live scene of this convention. We also, in this location, spoke not long ago with another member of the Congressional Black Caucus from the California delegation. She is Representative Barbara Lee.
This is Pacifica Radio's national broadcast. We are in Philadelphia on the ground inside the convention hall for the Democratic National Convention with Askia Muhammad, our co-host, both Askia and I. And we're fortunate enough to have run into Congresswoman Barbara Lee. Congresswoman, welcome.
Glad to be with you. I'm glad to see you here.
All righty. Congresswoman, you worked on the platform committee. We know that there were things to iron out with the Sanders crowd and with Hillary's people. Tell us, what progress do you think was made there?
Sure, and first let me just preface it by saying I did not endorse either Senator Sanders or Secretary of State Clinton.
That was duly noted by a whole set of folks.
but I didn't endorse, you know, because I wanted to be part of a process of writing the platform, and I wanted to be in a position where I could credibly work with both sides to do that. And I tell you, the platform is a very progressive platform. There were 15 of us on the drafting committee, and we wrote that platform with the input of people around the country. It was very inclusive. The people who testified had never testified before. Phil Wilson from the Black AIDS Institute, for example. We had some phenomenal African Americans, people of color, progressives testify around the country for input into the platform. And we came up with a platform, I think, that was very good, very progressive, not 100% for everyone, but I have to tell you, on each and every amendment that Senator Sanders put forth, now there were four appointees from the DNC, six appointed by Senator Clinton, and five by Senator Sanders. And when you look at the votes, I'd say 95% of the votes, Sanders had six, because I voted with Senator Sanders' appointees, because they were right in terms of the issues that they brought forward to make our platform a platform that was unifying and that really spoke to the aspirations of the American people. A couple of examples. abolish the death penalty. We put in language on institutional and systemic racism and how racial justice was still an issue that we have to address in America. We talked in the platform about public education and the inequities in education as it relates to people of color. We put in some very strong environmental justice language. We put in strong language on affordable housing and gentrification. Criminal justice reform section is magnificent. Ben Jealous, Congresswoman Waters, and others put together that and moved it forward. We put in a marijuana provision and talked about the disproportionate impact of marijuana offenses as it relates to the African-American community. We also got in, I'm really proud of this, the support for movements that are taking place that are forcing this change, and put in language, and specifically Black Lives Matter is in the platform, the desert saying Black Lives Matter. And so, you know, when you look at that platform, I think African-Americans, people of color, progressives can be really proud of it. No one ever reads the platform, though.
I was just going to ask about that, because a lot of cynics in the community say, the platform is nothing but a placebo.
Well, it has been. But I tell you, because I think of Senator Sanders and pushing the envelope, it's going to be what is going to unify this party and bring Hillary Clinton to victory in November. I think people want to see where the Democratic Party finally stands on issues. So I think it's a little different this time. And I believe that people, and I want to campaign to unify people around this platform, because they need to be able to hold their elected officials accountable. So people need to read it. I'm not going to blame anyone for not reading it or not knowing what's in it, but I have to tell you, if you're going to say you're going to vote for a Democrat and then let a Democrat get away with not voting to abolish the death penalty, well, you know, come on. This is who we are as a Democrat, as a party.
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because you've been a leader with legislation in Congress, the Pathways Out of Poverty. A lot of folks in our community complaining. No, nobody in Capitol Hill want to talk about poor folks. They don't want to talk about poverty. They talk about Bill Clinton's welfare reform, the devastation that that has done. But there have to be measures, right, to undo some of that. And in looking at your Pathways Out of Poverty, we see that Rise Out of Poverty Act, key things from that are in it. And what are your hopes for now, building from the platform and moving forward into Congress, of moving forward that piece of legislation, undoing some of that damage of welfare reform?
And let me tell you, I understand why people say no one talks about poverty, because up until a few years ago, you know, there were only a few of us talking about it. I've been in Congress 18 years, and I am telling you, it was all about fighting for the middle class, which we much fight for, because many African Americans have made it into the middle class. But we also have to fight for the poor and low-income people and people who haven't made it into the middle class. And so finally, we got, you know, and I have to give President Obama credit, because I worked with the White House and him. And now you hear the White House talking about people aspiring to and fighting for, you know, so we have broadened our message. And I chaired, and I had to really get this established within our Democratic caucus, a task force on poverty, inequality, and opportunity. I have over 100 members of those task force now. And those members really wanted to do something but didn't know what to do. So having said that, this legislation's been pending for several years now. And we know what to do to lift people out of poverty. But if you have a Tea Party-controlled Congress, which is what we have, I mean, you have 40-some members who will not even move on any issue, even if it affects their district, because these members have poor people in their districts, the Tea Party, and we just can't get any movement on them because they want no government, not smaller government. They want no government. They did not want to do anything that the president possibly would sign. They're obstructionists. And so, people, again, going back to the power of the people and holding members of Congress accountable, we've got to get rid of these Tea Party members. Elect members to the House who will vote and support Pathways Out of Poverty.
What's the prospect then of building the Progressive Caucus in Congress?
We've got over 80 members of the Progressive Caucus. I mean, we have, you know, Progressive Caucus is probably one of the largest Democrat. It is the largest Democratic caucus in Congress. And most members in the Progressive Caucus want to see this bill pass. They're co-sponsors of the bill. But for the life of me, we can't get anything done, and I'm not putting blame anywhere, but people need to look at who is stopping any of the progressive legislation, including criminal justice reform, including all of the bills that all members of the CBC and Progressive Caucus have put forward, we can't even get what we call a rule to bring them to the floor for even a vote. We can't even get the voting, the new Voting Rights Act to the floor.
That's right.
You know, we can't get any of the issues that are really directly related to the poor and low-income people and communities of color. We cannot get them to the floor. And I have to tell you, we have to hold all of ourselves accountable because we let those elections take place and let those people get elected. And we should have never done it. We should have come out to vote, and we should, November, need to take them out and vote for Democrats. And I can assure you, I'm going to work with them to make sure they support us with this legislation.
A new day moving forward.
It's absolutely a new day, but we got to remember, we got to vote. We got to show up in November.
On that note, we appreciate you, Congresswoman Barbara Lee, for taking time to stop by and speak with us. Thank you so
good
much.
To see you. I want you to know my first convention was in 72 with Shirley Chisholm. She was the first candidate I ever endorsed, and I organized her Northern California campaign. So to continue to work with Jesse and his campaigns and then Barack and his president and now Hillary Clinton is really, for me, quite a moment to be home.
Right. Okay. Thank you so very much.
Live at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia, Pacifica Radio's coverage of the historic events. Right now, on the floor of the convention, a tribute to fallen law enforcement officers. Dallas Sheriff Lupe Valdez is now speaking.
As I handed the server my credit card, he smiled and said that at least four tables had offered to pay for our meal. My girlfriend and I both teared up. There wasn't a single person in that restaurant that I personally knew. The people of Dallas that even know that even though our men and women in uniform are hurting, we never stop doing the job. Please help me. In honor of all of American fallen officers, with a moment of silence.
That was a voice from the floor and Stronger Together to tribute to fallen law enforcement officers. And we heard a bit of remarks from Dallas Sheriff Lupe Valdez. This is Margaret Prescott. I'm here in Philadelphia with Saskia Muhammad. And this is Pacifica Radio's live broadcast of the last night of the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, and Hillary Clinton will be speaking a little bit later on in the evening, as will her daughter, Chelsea Clinton. She'll be introducing her mother, and I'll have to say that the Code Pink protesters are continuing. They just went up the escalator with a Free Palestine banner, and they are attracting quite a bit of attention here. We are going to be returning to the floor, but first, we want to go